Hello and welcome to Open Sources Guelph, a shorter Open Sources that's just the Guelph parts. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Scotty Hertz and I set ourselves the goal earlier this year to host every member of City Council on Open Sources for a half-hour chat, but then we thought, why restrict ourselves to just councillors? Aren't there other figures in Guelph that our listeners would like to hear from? So we reached out to the Guelph Police Service and extended an invitation to Police Chief Jeff DeReuter, who immediately accepted. So who is Jeff DeReuter? He's been policing in Guelph for over three decades, serving as a beat cop when he arrived here in 1984, and worked his way up the ranks to Deputy Chief of the Guelph Police, when in March 2015, he officially took over as Guelph's lucky 13th Police Chief. Now, a lot's been going on with the police in the last year and a half. They hosted the Ontario Special Olympics back in the spring, and they finally broke ground on the long-awaited expansion and renovation of Guelph Police Headquarters. Those were the positives, though. Anecdotally, there have been incidents this year that might have put a dent in Guelph's reputation as one of Canada's safest cities. A cold-blooded murder at a local hotel, a brutal stabbing across the road from the library, and of course there was that incident where a mentally disturbed man was killed at Guelph General Hospital. Those incidents have all cracked our small-town veneer, even though Guelph is a growing city. So we talked about all that with the chief, along with matters of the, at the time, recent Ontario Ombudsman report on police training in de-escalation, the problems of drug abuse in the downtown core, car break-ins, bike thefts, traffic safety, and the chief's outreach on social media and the need for community policing. So, having said all that, let's say, hail to the chief, back when Jeff DeReuter appeared on Open Sources Guelph on June 30th.
And, okay, so we wanted to play something police-centric, although not necessarily the police, as Scotty outlined, because we have in studio Guelph Police Services Chief Jeff DeReuter. Chief DeReuter, thank you so much for coming to CFRU today and overlooking some of the stuff around here.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just enjoying your collection of vinyl in there. That was,
Everybody was loves the vinyl.
Quite impressive.
Yeah. Anything in particular?
You know what? I actually never got rid of mine, so I'm one of those fortunate ones. Yeah, that still has mine. I don't play it a lot. I get criticized for it still kicking around, but
it's coming back.
Do you have a turntable?
I still do.
There
yes.
you go. Okay, because my mom has a ton of old records and no turntable, so that's I guess that's always on the wish list.
I'll keep my eyes open for your mother.
Thank you. For a turntable, you mean?
For a turntable. Yeah, yes. That didn't come out right, did it?
No. This could be a long half
yeah,
hour.
Yeah, whoa. I didn't have enough
now that we made it uncomfortable for the chief.
Sorry, Adam's mom.
So you've been chief almost 2 years now?
I became the interim chief in September 2014. So, okay. It's coming up on 2 years and then full-time in March 2015. So it feels like forever.
But you've by no means been a police officer in Guelph for just 2 years. You have been here for... Well, 30 years. Well, over 30 years.
32 years.
Yeah. So. You were a beat cop here.
I was so, yeah. And you know what? It's it's home, I must say. You know, I live here and I think of it as home even though I wasn't raised here.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the difference in terms of your days walking the beat in Guelph in the 1980s and perhaps what you hear from some of your officers walking the beat now in terms of what they encounter, what the primary concerns are?
Absolutely. I think technology is just a huge piece. I mean, I think back to when I was on and now the technology they have and a police cruiser, it's an office. They've got everything in there and just the amount of training for the pieces of technology. And in some ways, it's a bit of a weakness in that. We did get out of the car more often, I think, in the interaction. And I think now there's such focus on all the information that you have at your fingertips. And certainly the complexity of what officers deal with. So I think when I started, we had detectives, they'd go on a shoplifting call. And now I look at sort of new officers and the complexity of the type of investigations they handle. It's there's a lot to learn and a lot of changes.
I do remember when I was, I guess when I was 12, 13, a friend of mine, one of his father's friends was a police officer, a detective, and that was the first time I ever saw a laptop was in a detective's cruiser. Like this little computer that sits on the dash. I mean, it wasn't so little as compared to this MacBook Air I have in front of me now, but I mean, that was wild. And I think police were probably some of the early adopters of some of that mobile tech.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just continues to grow. I mean, we've got automatic license plate readers, electronic tickets where it's printed right in the cruiser. And that way it really allows for the dissemination of information as opposed to data entry. And it's really an efficiency, hopefully.
Hmm. I wanted to talk about a number of issues, but I'll start with this one because it's in the news, and it doesn't necessarily apply to Guelph Police, but, I mean, it's on the minds of people, and the Ontario Ombudsman came back with a report that said that police training is kind of lacking when it comes to the areas of de-escalation, and, of course, this comes from what happened to Sammy Yateem in Toronto a couple of summers ago. So, and from your perspective, if Guelph Police were to encounter something or someone like a Sammy Yateem, someone who seems in distress and is potentially dangerous, would do you think Guelph Police would be prepared to handle that appropriately without loss of life?
These are really difficult situations.
and right off the bat.
No, yeah. No, I mean, it's a great discussion, and it's certainly very timely. And, and every year and every day in Ontario, police are having, quite frankly, thousands of interactions with people that are emotionally disturbed, mental health issues. And it's one of the complex issues for police in our communities. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a number of them do become very tragic and very unfortunate. But yet, there's many, the vast majority are dealt with a peaceful resolution through de-escalation communications. Having said that, I think we do welcome the opportunity to continue to have greater training and effective communication de-escalation, and the more tools that we can have in our tool belt to have that peaceful resolution, certainly desirable. But we do encounter people that are armed, that are emotionally disturbed, that are aggressive, assaultive, and they're incredibly challenging. In many ways, police have become the responder for mental health, even though we're not mental health professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in some ways, a complaint you'll hear police leaders talk about. And we need to continue to put more resources into our community and partnerships. And we do have some partnerships going on, with our city, with the Community Mental Health Association. And it is a challenge. And again, at the end of the day, we want a peaceful resolution for our entire community. But mental health is on the forefront in our community, and we see it at all ages. In elementary schools, we're getting calls right up to in some of our nursing homes where people are struggling. So it is just growing in leaps and bounds, and I can't quite put a finger on why, people ask. And some of it, I think, is greater awareness.
Mm.
But obviously, there's more going on as well, and we do need to continue to put resources and look at strategies, national strategies, and how we deal with it, because it affects all agencies.
Do you think it's a specialization that there may be a point where we have perhaps police officers who are police officers, mental health professionals kind of in one package? Because, you're talking, from the sound of it, that there is an increasing demand for something like that. The first reaction of people is if something, perhaps not necessarily violent, but weird is going on, something that, you can't control, is saying, hey, calm down there. The next step is to say, well, let's call the police and try and get this person settled down.
Okay. Absolutely. And we already have a partnership where we have workers that are based out of the police station and will go to the calls with us, and generally we'll go and just to make sure it's a safe environment, and then have the mental health professionals come in and assess and try to come up with alternatives other than an apprehension. So there are those programs. There are some services like Hamilton where they actually have them driving together in a cruiser and responding. I still think with the expertise of mental health, there is an opportunity to make sure we do have mental health workers as opposed to training police officers, because it is very complex. We do get training on responding to people that are emotionally disturbed and how to respond and trying to calm our communications.
I was going to ask also, and I hate if this is another hardball, but I think there has been a perception that public safety is more of a concern. Guelph, of course, is recognized as one of the most safest communities in Guelph, no question. And I say that to my mom all the time, when my mom tells me to, be careful. And,
job.
When I'm just, walking to the corner store, right? It's like, well, we live in Guelph. Statistically, here's the proof. This isn't real proof I'm holding. But
I wouldn't mind a copy of that, actually.
I have here.
But
in my
I mean, we've had someone shot dead in front of a hotel. We had someone in another hotel who was, you know, found dead after a disturbance. We had a stabbing in front of the library, and then of course what happened, the unfortunate incident at the hospital last year. Anecdotally, and we were talking about anecdotal evidence last hour on an entirely different issue, but there is a feeling that the city may be getting less safer. Is that something you're hearing? And are people justified to be concerned?
We continue to be a very safe community, and I do message that. But having said that, even last year we dropped some rankings as far as the our rankings as a safe community. And we are getting some big city issues. Mm-hmm. Mental health comes into it. Drug addiction is an issue for us. And, you know, some of it is a perception. Again, I think you can be very safe walking around our community. Having mm-hmm. said that, there's always precautions people should take. But we have seen crimes of violence, as you described, and we're aware of that. And we need to continue to make sure that we do respond, in whether not only in our patrols, but our training, but also the partnerships, which is a big thing we focus on in terms of how do we respond. And I think of addictions and crystal meth, which is an issue, and we see it in our downtown core. And so we have a number mm-hmm. of partnerships through our drug strategy, and in many ways, that's the root of some of the problems.
Yeah, somebody posted on Reddit. I always put the shout out that we're gonna have when we have special guests on the show if they want a question, and this has a bit of buckshot in it, so I hope you'll forgive me. But this person asked, "When will the police start cracking down on the meth heads riding motorized mountain bikes around town?"
Sorry.
Scotty laughs, but yeah, I mean, this was a legitimate question somebody posted. And
through the
but
film
it,
set, right?
Yeah, it does get to something, because I think there is, it's not invisible, but it's perhaps something people don't look at. It's sort of, when you cursorily glance at the downtown, you don't see the drug problems, but they're there.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's a couple issues there. I mean, there's the motorized vehicles, which is it really a traffic issue? And
yeah.
I'm going to separate that a little bit from the drug issue.
Yeah.
But we do know that there's a drug issue. And we just recently, as a result of some feedback and observations, we just did a project, and we had some results that we both positive and negative results. We know the issues are there. And so part of it is to enforcement. Part of it is working with our partners in terms of response, but also of officer visibility. And we know that we've got clinics where people go for their meth addictions. We've got social services. We've got the drop-in centers. So we know those issues are going to be live and well in the downtown, and we do need to respond.
Yeah, I was actually downtown today, and I noticed it was a bit quieter. It sounds like there was some arrests made. I don't anecdotally whether that made a difference or not, but it was pretty quiet in the square today, more than normal. And it sounds like there was, you know, crystal meth, among other things. But my question, which was also a listener question as well, was to do with marijuana, because it was listed in the drugs in terms of what they were busted for, the prescription drugs, crystal meth, and marijuana. And I think there's a bit of a misperception out there about marijuana yet. And, of course, there was that came down today from the Liberal government about legalization of it next year in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are still under the impression that – I think a lot of people are giving the impression that marijuana is completely legal. Yet, in some ways, it's a bit of a gray area. I mean, every 420 here on Johnson
yeah.
Green. I hope I'm not ratting on anybody, but everybody knows.
We may be aware of that, yes.
just a little bit, eh?
You may have
and the same on
that.
Parliament Hill on the same day, there's hundreds of people in possession, and yet, you know, nothing happens, yet somehow – and, you know, granted, dealers and that should be taken down, but marijuana is still on that list. But as of 2017 or 18, it may not be on that list anymore. What should people know in terms of not necessarily their rights, but if they are in possession or whatever of marijuana, what can you sort of clear up that gray area a little bit? How, you know, what will the clampdown
be? It's a
be
long if, weekend and Scotty yes. has plans as well.
I have plans. No.
But it still continues to be on the books, and it
yes.
still continues to be against the law. And I've heard the same information
yep.
right after the election. People, you know, immediately thought, oh, it's now legal. And that
yeah.
isn't the case. And we also recognize the changing landscape. And as police leaders, we're working with and advocating certainly with the government to get this right. And I think to their credit, they're taking the time to look at the various aspects, because it is complex. And whether it's about the effect of when you're driving,
mm-hmm.
and just how we're going to go about it. It is complex, and ensuring that we do get it right. And so there's a certain amount of discretion in some ways that occurs, but we also can't have it flaunted either. And mm-hmm. we recognize 420, and It's been there for a number of years, and at times you got to pick your battles as well.
Right. A lot of that has to do with the community policing aspect, and as a member of City Council, when I said you were going to be on the show, they praised you for that, and they said you have done great work in terms of making the police visible and making them interactive with the community. You're a big social media guy, so how does that play into how you interact with the community?
Absolutely. I think one of the great opportunities I do have is to get out in the community, and I think we recognize that we're only as effective as the trust and confidence that the public has in us, and we have to work at that. And so you talk about some challenging situations that occur in policing and that can negatively impact how the community feels. And so we have to work hard to make sure we have the trust of the community and our professionalism, our integrity, and to work at that and build relationships. And so whether it's diversity in the police force, we have to build these relationships and that the community can trust to call us and that we will handle the situations that they put in front of us.
And there's a big outreach recently with the Special Olympics, which the Guelph Police had a hand in organizing.
Absolutely, and that was just a tremendous community event. And, each day still I get feedback from citizens about how great it was for our community. And, full credit to our community for reaching out for what a great cause. And you, anybody that had the opportunity to go there just certainly was touched by it.
Mm-hmm. Can I just ask, how did that relationship come about? How was that driven that the Guelph – I thought it was very interesting that the Guelph Police were going to be involved with Special Olympics. I didn't really make the connection.
So Special Olympics and the Law Enforcement Torch Runs, a charity of choice of Ontario's Chiefs of Police, and have been since the 90s. And so Special Olympic Games are always organized by a police service,
right,
sort of sponsored, and then obviously it's the community that gets behind it. But it's a great partnership, and what an opportunity we have to really deal with people that with intellectual disabilities, to give them opportunities. And it's more than the games. It's really about inclusion and opportunities that we have for people. And it's so touching, the opportunity that we have to lead an event like this in our community.
Well, now that we got the fluff out of the way, back to hard issues.
I'm here for the hard issues. It's a long weekend. People are planning their weekend, so let's get into the hard issues.
Well, actually, that's a good question in terms of how you treat a long weekend versus how you treat a regular weekend. Is there any different precautions? I mean, are more cops on the street?
The hospital is busier.
Well, that's true. Well, you would know.
Yes. I'm there a lot. Anyway, that's
long weekends are interesting because we always know that a large percentage of the population is going to leave our community. But for those that stay behind, we typically see alcohol consumption, and especially the warm weather, where we see those sorts of incidents. And we do know that Riverside Park tomorrow, we'll have fireworks and other events.
So,
generally, there are less people in our community on the long weekends because, again, many people will go away. So some of the road safety, some of the drinking and driving type of initiatives that we take and really encourage people to be safe as they travel and really do enjoy the weekend and the freedom that we have that comes with Canada Day.
That's a good segue to something I wanted to talk about, which is traffic. And it's sort of a pet peeve of mine because I usually walk places. I'm either on the bus or I'm on my bike or I'm walking. At least two of those things I'm interacting with traffic. And I do notice, and I wonder if you've noticed the same, that Guelph seems to be somewhere where a lot of aggressive driving happens. Would you agree with that?
Not only an observation, but certainly feedback that I get from citizens. And I was just talking to a woman the other day who's in a motorized wheelchair, and just the lack of recognition for pedestrians, bikes. We need to do better. And so we do have increased our staffing in traffic and enforcement, but many of these issues are tough to deal with enforcement. And really it's trying to educate our public, slow down, be aware, and stop being such a rush. And there is aggression, and I see it as I'm driving in my personal vehicle. It is an issue, and as a community, we need to do better.
Yeah, and it's a weird question because I don't want to say that it's purely the police responsibility to clamp down on people. It's not, there's a personal responsibility in everyone who drives aggressively and leans on the wheel a bit too hard trying to go around corners. And I used to walk home from work and down Silver Creek Parkway, and this was at 3 p.m., which is change of shift, road is exceptionally busy, and what I would see people do is cut through the Silver Creek driveway into the parking lot on the corner of Speedville, and it would cut through that plaza so they don't have to sit at the lights for like 2 minutes. And it went through my head more than a few times. And again, not to put it all on the police, but it went through my head. Where are the police?
There's going
to
be three cars there tomorrow. Yeah. You know that, right? It's a holiday, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we've really worked on over the last number of months is really being intentional on getting our stats on a daily basis on our enforcement. And part of it is to show our community that we are getting around to the different areas, dealing with the different issues, and really both an education awareness piece, but also I do get a lot of concerns, complaints by citizens about speeding in their neighborhoods. And really, we do track them all, and we try to get in all areas. But it's a big city. We have to balance out residential, school, some of our wide-open type roads. So we really have been intentional in making sure the city and our residents know that we are getting around.
I do get the media releases, and I do see those stats. And, you know, there will be a list of, like, today at this corner, there for 3 hours, handed out this many tickets, and I'm later at this corner. How does that computation come about? Is there like particular corners you have an eye on, or?
So our traffic division actually tracks those, and in terms of, you know, where the complaints are, where the issues are, and you know, tied in as well to motor vehicle collisions. You know, it has to be intelligence led. We shouldn't just be, it shouldn't be about revenue. It should be about road safety. So that's part of the focus that we have, is just to make sure that we are getting to places where there are those concerns. The other part, sometimes it's the word perception reality. We'll get concerns by citizens in a neighborhood, and so we have some technology where we actually can do some tracking in terms of what the reality of the situation is to help us in our enforcement.
Quite a bit of upheaval going on at the headquarters downtown. Busy place. I walk by there almost every day, and I notice there's, you know, shifting of cars and things cordoned off. How is that going? I mean, I know it probably makes your day-to-day a bit of a pain in terms of coordinating from headquarters, but is it maybe it isn't a fair question is it on schedule? Is always what people want to know.
I know what you mean. It
looks like a war zone right now.
It either looks like you're trying to find the bottom of the police station, or you're digging a big enough hole to bury it.
Bit of both, right? They're putting a condo beside it, and they're going to move into that.
Well, in one of those great holes, we did find a lot of cement from a previous build, which is a bit of a challenge. But, yeah, we are on schedule, and more importantly, on budget. That was an important thing, obviously, for our community. And it's a three-year journey, and one of the challenges is that we have to remain operational throughout that, and we've moved a number of our staff to other locations. But, you know, it's really getting the next stage where get the forms and start pouring some concrete. And so that's what you're really seeing, those big holes. But we had some other pre-planning we had to do as far as moving some hydro switch gears and just really getting set hydro lines on Freshfield Street on the west end. Really to get it prepared so that we can really get going. But, yeah, it's an interesting environment. The inside, we used to have ceiling tiles, much like in the studio here, and it no longer exists. And it looks like a bit of a horror movie inside in many of our places. So it's an interesting environment.
It might help the image. Don't want to go back in that police station. You don't know what's in there. I wanted to mention this before we wrap, because people do have their eyes on the police budget. It's 17.4% of the total revenue from property taxes. A lot of people have their eye on that number, and a lot of people are looking at it saying, do we need to spend that much on the police? And considering, again, revisiting those statistics, I'd say we are one of the safest communities in Guelph.
Absolutely, and certainly the Police Services Act is being revisited in terms of looking at core functions of policing. Our percentage on the budget has been fairly steady for a number of years, but we also recognize we are a big item. The vast majority of our budget really is our compensation package for our staff, and that is a challenge in policing, so we need to continue to look at ways to cut some of those costs, to find efficiencies, other ways of doing business.
I wanted to also ask about this before we wrap, just more because I find it a fascinating subject, because, again, looking at the media releases, it seems like every other day there are reports of people breaking into cars. Not so much breaking because the cars aren't locked, because those reports always end with, lock your cars, people, so we can nip this in the bud. But this seems like a weird sort of crime spree. I don't know what you can say about investigating this, but I know somebody posted on the Overheard at Guelph Facebook page a picture they took in the winter of a parking lot where there are little footsteps in the snow of people trying to get into seeing if cars were unlocked. So I'm curious, is there some sort of artful dodger running around trying to break into cars?
You know, and it typically is a warm weather issue where we do see an increase. The wintertime is fantastic when you're, you know, working nights and you follow those tracks. And we do it. And we have done it many times. But
you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes.
No. But it continues to be a problem. And yes, lock your car, but also about valuables and not putting them in your car. Because we do know that people are breaking in with other gadgets to get into locked cars as well. And, you know, some of it may be about addictions. Mm. Some of it's about opportunity. And we do know it's – and we'll have some of our special cars out and about just to track that. But unfortunately, we don't catch as many people as are responsible for doing it. And it is a – it's a problem here in other communities as well. Many times annoyance, and it probably occurs more than we ever hear about because people just don't report it. And so we encourage people to report it so that we can actually have our patrols according to where the issues are.
What's still exciting for you about policing – in terms of the job, any aspect of the job that in terms of, that keeps you engaged, that makes you get up every day and be glad to be a Guelph police officer?
You know, it really is our community, and we have an outstanding community, and sometimes we have some of these other issues that we get into, but the things that go on in our community, the quality of our city, it's just tremendous. And as we embrace diversity in our community, the inclusion in our community, it's just tremendous. We have a wonderful city, and we really do need to celebrate it, but continue to make it a safe and enjoyable place to live.
Well, Chief DeRuyter, thank you so much for joining us today. I think it was a great conversation, and if people want to follow you on social media, where can people get in touch with you?
Chief DeRuyter on Twitter. I do welcome the followers, and it's really just an opportunity to not only celebrate what we do, but our community. So. And our social media presence through our public information officer as well, Facebook, Instagram.
I will say it is a great social media presence, and that's not something you can say about all the Guelph organizations that the police does a really good job of. So,
and we have to work hard at it. We lost our daily newspaper, and so at times there's a bit of a vacuum, and we need to make sure that we find other ways to get a message out, and including coming here. And so thanks so much for the opportunity.
Well, thank you for coming in, and especially before a busy long weekend. Will you be working this weekend?
I am going to enjoy some of the festivities tomorrow and in the citizenship opportunity for new citizens. So I look forward to participating in that and welcoming those new Canadian citizens.
All right.
Excellent.
And once again, that was Jeff DeRuyter, Chief of Police of the Guelph Police Services. You can connect with the Guelph Police at guelphpolice.ca, and you can follow the Chief through his personal Twitter feed at Jeff DeRuyter. And that's all for this edition of the Open Sources Guelph Beat. We're going to be running these interviews every Wednesday through August, so stay tuned. And remember that you can listen to Open Sources Guelph live every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca. But if you should miss it, you can download the podcast version every Monday. The host for Open Sources Guelph is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to the Guelph Politicast. You can interact with Open Sources Guelph through our website at opensourcesguelph.com, on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can connect with Scotty at Scotty Hertz on Facebook and Twitter, and read his personal blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. You can reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson, and of course there is the Guelph Politico Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. For all the latest political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, and the Guelph Politicast will be back here with a new episode on Friday, and until then, we will see you next time.